Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. We have with us again Richard Weikert, professor of history in the Cal State system. And I've mentioned a couple of books that he's published. There's one more recent book that I haven't mentioned. It came out in the year 2016, and it's a book that's very accessible. It deals more with the contemporary debate in light of the history of science and the history of Darwinism in particular. And that book is The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. So there, it sounds like you're dealing with history, but also with philosophical questions as well, right?
Yes, I do talk about a lot of contemporary thinkers, Darwinists, scientists, also philosophers and such, embracing ideas that I see as dehumanizing.
Right. So this would be a good book to enter into. Well, okay, given what we know about the history of these ideas, what can we say about the contemporary debate in light of that history? Is that fair to say that
Sure.
your book does that?
Sure.
Okay. So I mentioned in a previous podcast that there was this email conversation among some colleagues interested in the history of ideas, Darwinism and racism in particular. And one of the things that was pointed out in that conversation was that there were, of course, unsurprisingly, pre-Darwinian racist views, both among Christians or so-called Christians and among those who, you know, atheists and agnostics who claim to have some kind of scientific justification for racism. But what would you say, Richard, is the main difference between, let's just start with alleged scientific rationales for racism. What's the main difference between pre-Darwinian racist ideology and Darwinian racist ideology as based on science, regardless of how legitimate that science actually is, but the claim is it's based on science. So what's the main difference between pre-Darwinian and Darwinian scientific racism?
Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, you're absolutely correct that racism has a very long and sordid history, and we need to be very careful not to even imply, much less state, that Darwinism, it was the origin of racism or somehow was the beginnings of it. That's far, very, very far from the truth. In fact, I would actually argue that Darwin, in his book, The Descent of Man, is actually integrating ideas from racism that have been around for many years. But what's interesting is that he actually does integrate them into his theory, and they become a very important part of his reasoning about human evolution. The reason why is because for Darwinism to get off the ground, he has to show that there's variation within species. In fact, that's the very first two chapters of his book, The Origin of Species, about variation. And so in Darwin, in trying to show that there's variation, has to show within the human species that there's variation. So part of his way to show variation was to say, well, look, we know that, and again, when I'm saying we know here, we're talking about the sort of the what people understood in Europe about racism. Darwin would say, well, we know that these people in Africa and other places, Tierra del Fuego and such, are inferior mentally. We know that they don't have the cultural capabilities that we have and such. And so he believed that these races were biologically inferior in mental capacity, also in moral capacity. He actually mentions that as well. So it's actually an integral part of his theory. It's not just something peripheral to his ideas. It's a way of him actually trying to prove his views by saying, look, these races are different. That shows that there's this variation within humans that can cause evolution to happen.
Right.
So that's the first important part. The second point that you're making about what's the difference is that because Darwin saw those racial differences as being biologically ingrained, not just something cultural. And that was a big debate in the 19th century, was to what extent was, let's say, the black Africans, to what extent is their, you know, not having the same culture as Europeans? To what extent is that biological? To what extent is that just cultural? Can we educate them, you know, to make them like we Europeans are? Or is that just impossible because of biological reasons? And many of the Darwinists, including Darwin himself, came to the position that their mental inferiorities were biological. Thus, it's impossible to bring them up to European standards.
So what about those who tried to frame racism within a Christian perspective? What do you have to say about that?
Well, yeah, there were a number of different ways of trying to do that. Some of the ways were trying to show that different lineages coming out of the book of Genesis or something. Some of the lineages, say, coming out of Noah's offspring that split into different races, racial groups, and some of those were cursed racial groups and such like that. So there was different kinds of biblical justifications being produced for some of those things. However, there was on the other side many in the 19th century, at this time that we're talking about, who believed that because they all descended from the same original pair, Adam and Eve, and then later on Noah and his family, that this meant that there was commonality in them too, so that they were produced from the same lineage and had thus the same humanity and human value. So there were two different opposing forces going on. And of course, in the United States, where we had race-based slavery very prominent, that was also helping, to drive racism in places where Christianity was pretty strong. In the southern part of the United States, there was strong traditions of Christianity. There was a lot of revivalism going on in the 19th century there. And so, unfortunately, many of those Christians embraced racist positions.
Yeah. How would you compare the weight of authenticity of those claiming to ground racism in the Christian tradition with those claiming to ground racism in Darwinism? Is there a difference between the two?
Well, again, the key difference was many of the Darwinists saw the position as biological and thus bought into a notion of biological determinism. And again, even though some of the Christians also had this notion of there being a cursed line or race or something as well, there also was within Christianity this notion of the brotherhood of humanity as well. And so what you find among abolitionist positions is that many of the abolitionists were themselves Christians who were promoting the idea that everyone is descended from a common human ancestor. Now, again, there was some of that within the Darwinian tradition as well. Darwin himself was an abolitionist as well, and so were others in the Darwinian tradition. But interestingly, they embraced a strong racist position, believing that these races ultimately were going to die out anyway.
So there you are, Richard, performing as a historian. Now put on your philosophical hat, which you do in the latest book that I just mentioned. Which tradition do you think best blocks racism, Darwinism or Christianity?
Well, Darwinism doesn't, and Darwinists today, of course, most Darwinists today don't embrace racism. And so they would argue that, you know, Darwinism doesn't necessarily promote racism. And I would say that there is something to that. However, Darwinism, pure and simple, does not have any philosophical reason why racism couldn't be true. And so people like James Watson, the co-discoverer of the helix model of DNA, for example, himself is a very outspoken, although he tries to keep it hidden, sometimes racist, and he's caught in a lot of heat for it based on his view of Darwinian evolution. Konrad Lorenz, as well, in the 1940s, wrote an article promoting Nazism, claiming that Darwinism was the best proof for Nazism because of its views of racial inequality. However, Christianity does promote the idea that humans are created in the image of God and thus have value in the Darwinian view. In fact, interestingly, in Michael Ruse's book about the problem of war, he actually makes the claim that there is no real value to human life because it's come about by chance processes. And this is a point that I make in The Death of Humanity quite prominently as well. If humanity is just the result of chance processes, then human life has no intrinsic value. And there are people like Peter Singer at Princeton University who argue that very overtly. In fact, I debated Peter Singer on that very point. Does human life have intrinsic value? And Peter Singer says, no, it doesn't. And part of the reason Singer believes that is because of his view of Darwinism having demolished the notion of human life having any kind of intrinsic value. So thus, I don't see Darwinism as having a way of promoting any kind of notion of any human having value, whether it's based on racism, based on any other kind of difference, human difference.
So we can celebrate Darwinists who do favor opposing racism, but you're saying that their own worldview, if it's a materialistic version of Darwinism, doesn't really provide the resources for closing the door to exploiting other human beings.
Sure. And, you know, there are Darwinists, of course, who embrace a theistic evolution position, who can then say, well, we've got this other way of combating racism or something by, you know, bringing in God into the equation or picture or something. But their evolutionary views are not going to stand in opposition to racism.
Right.
And this, by the way, is also, interestingly, there's been actually a huge shift in views of racism in the late 20th century, especially among white nationalists. A lot of white nationalists today are not Christian in their orientation, although many of them were in the early 20th century. Many of Ku Klux Klan and other white nationalists in the United States in the early 20th century did identify themselves as Christian. That's no longer the case. Many of them are secular, and a lot of them actually are using Darwinism, again, as a rationale for their racist positions.
Right. Sadly so.
Yes.
Well, I think on this particular topic, I would encourage our listeners to check out Richard Weikert's 2016 book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. There you get a more thorough treatment of the content of this podcast. Thanks, Richard, for joining us in this conversation about Darwinism, Christianity, and racism, both its history and the philosophy of what we make of it. We've interacted with prominent philosopher of science who also likes to do history of science, Michael Ruse, and you've shown how his book doesn't do a very good job of doing history, and he foists upon us his own philosophical views, even though, great, he's against war, but his own worldview pitifully doesn't provide the resources for it, because, to, as you pointed out, the morality of not killing other people for unjustified reasons, which is the basis of aggressive warfare, his own worldview doesn't provide the resources for that. So thanks so much, Richard, for joining us, and we'll have to have some other conversations in the future about this. Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Again, I'll direct our listeners to the website darwin2hitler.com. You'll find more information about the scholar for today, Richard Weikert, his work, actually a video that you might be interested in called The Biology of the Second Reich, Social Darwinism and the Origins of World War I. So although we talked about Nazism, World War I is also another topic of interest about Darwinism and warfare. Thanks for joining us, and please tune in another time to find out more about Darwinism and the ideas that it has spawned. I'm Mike Keyes, and you've been listening to ID the Future. Take care.
From jumping insects with real gears to the strange world of carnivorous plants, the details of the natural world reveal planning and purpose. In his new book, Foresight, Brazilian scientist Marcos Eberlin shows how the mantis shrimp can pack a deadly punch and how a tiny protein in a bird's eye may work just like a GPS. You can join Marcos Eberlin as he uncovers a myriad of artful solutions to major engineering problems in chemistry and biology. Find out how these solutions point beyond blind evolution and point instead to the designing ability of a mind, and a mind with foresight. Order on Amazon or visit DiscoveryInstitutePress.com to get your own copy of the book Foresight. Get Eberlin's new book from Amazon or at DiscoveryInstitutePress.com/foresight.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.